So I'd like to start by acknowledging that today is our last full day of practice together. And some of you might have noticed that movement of the mind into the future, into planning. One thing you really don't need to worry about today is actually getting away from Gaia House tomorrow morning. The coordinators and reception have a very well-planned system for organising taxis and getting everyone to the station on time. So a coordinator will come in tomorrow morning after the first sit and actually explain all that and put that system into operation. So really just to let go as much as you can of that movement to the future. So real encouragement to really use the question, use the listening, the breath, to stay here and be present, to stay with the silence, this beautiful space we're in, sun shining again today, and to really use today to really kind of strengthen that ability to be present. As we notice that movement to the future, it starts to become a bit more like maybe our daily lives, but still embedded within a communal practice of support and within a simple rhythm of life. So encouraging that using this day as best you can to strengthen the ability to open to the moment as it is and to be present to your experience. So this morning I'd like to talk a little bit about how compassion, which is so central, it's at the very heart of Son practice, is actually cultivated, it's practiced. You may have realised at this point that within the meditation tradition, we don't cultivate something like loving-kindness or Tonglen as they do in the Tibetan tradition. That the practice itself is just questioning. So from this sense of this tradition, what they do is they embed compassion at the very heart of the practice. Through the Bodhisattva path, the Bodhisattva vows, and the Bodhisattva precepts. When somebody first comes to this practice in Korea, like Martine talked about in her talk on the very first night, well, first, not full day, about that great faith, that we often come to practice from a more kind of self-orientated perspective. We come with a sense of distress, maybe, or a sense of dissatisfaction in our life, and we're looking for some way to kind of meet that. And when you come to this practice in Korea, they open out that sense of perspective immediately into this wide open perspective of what practice is about. So the Bodhisattva and the Bodhisattva path is, and Bodhisattva means something like Sattva is a being and Bodhi is awakening. So it's a being that is inclined towards, it's practicing to awaken. But the practicing to awaken for the benefit, for the well-being, and for the happiness of all beings. So automatically there's this movement away from a self-orientation to an other orientation, to a much wider perspective of why you're practicing. And we can talk about two types of bodhisattva. There's the archetypal bodhisattva. And we have an example here behind my left shoulder of Kuan Yin. And Kuan Yin embodies compassion. She's a bodhisattva of compassion. And her name means something like the one who listens to or the one who hears the cries of the world. So that's a real evocation of that first kind of aspect of compassion I talked about last night, of being receptive, of turning towards and noticing suffering in the world. And you get some depictions of Kuan Yin where you actually see her stepping down with her hand outstretched, which evokes that second aspect of actually moving into action, responding to the suffering we see. But we also have the Bodhisattva as a commitment, an inclination that we take on as lay practitioners or as monastics and nuns, that we're actually entering the practice from this perspective that the practice is for the benefit of all, that we're practicing to meet the suffering of the world, to liberate beings from their distress and their angst and their pain. So part of this is that practitioners take on four vows. And there's a way in which a vow has a lot more solemnity to it, a lot more, we might say, sacredness to it. It's actually a deeper sense of commitment. And the four vows that they take on are sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them all. Defilements are inexhaustible. I vow to cut them off. Dharma gates are numberless. I vow to learn them all. The Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to accomplish it. So they take these vows when they first engage with the practice, but they also renew these vows quite regularly at ceremonies. And they also take on the precepts, the Bodhisattva precepts, which consist of 10 major precepts and 48 minor precepts. And these are a mix of the usual things we might be aware of refraining from certain things. But there are also precepts in it which are actually about aspects to cultivate, ways to live in the world, this sense of a more positive response to the world. And again, as monks and nuns, they retake and recite these precepts every month. And as lay people, they will do it a minimum of annually. And one of the things you might notice about these vows that they take on is that they're impossible. And from my perspective, there's two kind of reasons why this might be. The first is humility, that we don't build an ego, a self, a special self around this idea that we're going to save the world. But I think a more important aspect is, and this reflects really the Korean culture and the kind of the practice we've engaged in, which is more communal, which is a sense that actually the Bodhisattva vows, the way of the Bodhisattva, is actually a communal practice. It's something we do as a Sangha, and that gives it more strength, more power. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later in the talk. So what I'd like to start with is exploring these vows in terms of what each one of them is actually tasking us to do. How we might respond to each of these vows. So sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them all. This really is that first aspect of hearing or listening to the cries of the world, of turning towards suffering. And it can be so much easier to turn away. It can be our habitual kind of inclination to not want to see the suffering of the world, to be moved by a sense of fear. How often do we walk in a hurry down the street and not notice the homeless person? It's easier not to engage. So this vow is really inclining us to stop and notice, to take in the suffering of the world. To be moved by it. Defilements are inexhaustible. I vow to cut them off. When we turn to suffering, when we turn to the pain and distress of the world, what we find arises is our resistance, our reactivity, our fear, our self-centeredness, our powerlessness, our rationalization that there's nothing I can do. And here the task is to actually open to that. That's part of the moment. To allow that to be there without rejecting it, but also without sticking to it, without feeding it, without being defined by it. In that spacious awareness that receives all experience, there's the possibility that it can arise and pass in its own time. It doesn't need to be a problem. Dharma gates are numberless. I vow to learn them all. So as this reactivity ceases, there's the possibility of entering that space I talked about last night, where we've suspended our views and opinions about how things should or shouldn't be. Our reactivity, our sense of self has been muted, more, it's faded into the background, so we're more outward looking, more in a space to actually receive what's going on. And we can actually start to notice how the heart resonates with the suffering that we are encountering. And empathy can arise within that space. So here the task is really to allow this space, this creative space of possibility, to rest in that space and start to notice that movement of the desire, the wish to respond to the suffering. And as I said last night, to wait in that space for that appropriate response. How can we meet this? The Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to accomplish it. And here is that image of Kuan Yin stepping down. Here we act, we speak, we act. And sometimes that speaking and acting, of course, is nothing more than to actually bear witness to what's going on in silence. That's the best we can do. But here the response is called into action. And this action is held within a sense of cultivation. This sense, as I talked about last night, of being free from the anxiety of imperfection. We act as best we can, given the situation that we're in. And in the Korean tradition, they very much talk about looking at ethics, a compassionate response, in three ways or in three levels. There's the intention. So what was the intention behind our response, behind our action? Was it compassionate? There is the action itself. So was the action actually in alignment with this? Was it the most appropriate response? Is there something we can learn from how we actually acted, even though our intention was a certain way? And finally, there's the outcome. How did it actually land? Did it have the desired impact that we hoped? Or did it actually even maybe cause more difficulties? And from that we can learn that actually maybe there was something we weren't aware of, that we hadn't actually opened up to, that we need to kind of increase our sense of capacity for what we open to and are aware of in the moment. And these vows, these compassionate responses, these tasks, are very much guided by the Bodhisattva precepts. And as I said, there are 10 major and 48 minor, but some of them actually have this sense of actually a positive way of being in the world. And what I'd like to do is just read you one to give you a flavour of it. So this is the 9th one in the minors, and it's care well for those who are sick. Upon seeing someone who is afflicted with a disease, a disciple of the Buddha must care and provide for him as he would for the Buddha himself. First among the 8 fields of blessings is that of nursing the sick. Whenever one's parents, teachers, disciples, or anyone else is afflicted with a particular disease and their limbs or senses are impaired, then one should make an effort to help them recover. But should a bodhisattva, whether he be in a temple, a field, a forest, a path, or a mountain, fail to nurse and give assistance to someone who is sick through thoughts of dislike and resentment, then he breaks a secondary precept and commits a defiling offence. And this particular precept actually harks back to an encounter, an event in the Buddha's teaching life, when he joined a gathering of some of his disciples and discovered a monk who was ill, who had been left to basically lie there in his own vomit and feces and wasn't being cared for by the other monks. And the Buddha, with his attendant Ananda, actually took care of this monk. They washed him and they took care of him and made sure he was comfortable. And then he admonished his monks, his disciples, for not actually taking care of their fellow practitioner. So we can see here again in the Buddha's sense of practice that actually we're always being called to respond to what's there in front of us, to meet it as appropriately as we can. That the point of this practice is not to have a particular experience or reach a particular state, but to cultivate a way of being in the world that responds to the world and makes the world a better place for all. So, to come back to this idea I had at the beginning about this bodhisattva path being a communal path. And certainly from the way that Martin and Stephen talk about their life within the monastery, you get a sense of this communal practice of compassion, of this way of meeting each other that was always founded in this movement of compassion towards each other. That there's an image, another image of Kuan Yin, where Kuan Yin actually has 1,000 arms. And on each arm, on each hand, there is an eye. And in some of the depictions, there's actually also an instrument in each hand. And for me, that really kind of holds this image of how, as a community, when we come together, when we act together, more suffering can be responded to. more suffering is seen. But also we all bring our own individual talents, our own individual capacities to bear. And I've been involved in the past with XR. And one of the ways they talk about it is we're all crew. This idea that not everyone needs to be arrested, not everyone needs to be on the front line, that the person who brings food, the person who meets you at the police station if you have been arrested, the person that drives you to the station or drives you home when you come back from the protest, that they are as important, they are as integral to what's going on. So this sense that the Sangha is the building block of community, of compassion, and how that, if you like, builds out, that from the Sangha and from Sanghas coming together, there's the potential that we start to build a culture of compassion, of awakening, which starts to meet some of those more systemic forms of suffering that are in the world, such as racism, gender, sexual orientation, and the climate crisis and ecological crisis, which require us to work together as bodhisattvas, not just individually. So this vision of compassion is embedded within the very life of the practicing career of Son. And it's also embedded in how we live together as a community, as a society. So not only are we called to respond appropriately to what's in front of us as individuals, we're also called to respond appropriately to what's in front of us as communities, to create the peace, the world that we wish to live in. So the invitation today is to open out that perspective of practice, to invite in that sense that this practice is not just for my own well-being, and of course that is part of, we are part of all beings, but also this sense that this practice is very much embedded in a practice for the sake of all beings. So you might, at the beginning of a block of sitting, just really consciously bring to mind that you're practicing, that the intention of this practice is for the sake of all beings, it's for the well-being and the happiness of all beings. Or you might similarly at the end of a block of practice, is you might, they talk about it as sharing merit, you might actually dedicate any sense of insight, any sense of good, of calm that has come from your practice to the well-being of all. So this sense of really just starting to embed the practice in that sense of a wider perspective, but also that sense that we're actually practicing here together in that communal sense of compassion, in a way that we actually support each other and meet each other. So, thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.